From Montpelier, Vermont, this is Public Health Radio. With the number of uninsured Americans currently at 47 million and ever growing, a variety of safety net providers have attempted to fill the gap and help these uninsured individuals who are often unable to afford even the most basic medical care. Many forego needed health care, and others build up huge medical bills if they are forced to seek medical care. Nearly half the bankruptcies in the U.S. result from these medical bills. On today's show, we'll be highlighting an important component of Vermont's healthcare safety net, the Free Clinics of Vermont. We'll be speaking with nurses, doctors, and the patients who use these clinics to learn about the successes as well as the limitations of these clinics in their attempt to provide decent healthcare to their patients. So stay tuned for this exploration of Vermont's Free Clinics.
I've never been offered insurance. I think a lot of companies today, that's been my personal experience, they try to classify you in a way to avoid paying insurance. I've worked even for state agencies for years, and they would call me and others a temporary employee. So they circumvented the obligation to pay insurance, and there's a lot of things going on like that.
I and my family lost health insurance. We're unable to continue to afford the premiums. It's been probably at least three and a half years. We owned our own business, and it was a small business here in Vermont with five full-time employees, and then it just got to be too expensive to maintain it for a small business, and we all lost it at that point.
Well, I don't have health insurance. My husband is retired. And when you retire, you don't have no more health insurance, no health insurance, and we can't afford to get insurance on me. There's insurance on him because he's 7 years older than I am, and this is the reason why I haven't got health insurance.
He qualifies for Medicare and you don't?
Right, because I ain't old enough yet. See, I'm 63 and I'll be 64 in June.
Well, basically what happens is all the park rangers are now seasonal staff. And when you're seasonal staff, you work for a part of the season and you don't receive health benefits for that.
And even during the season you're working, you still don't get health benefits then either?
No, you're still considered part-time seasonal.
This is Public Health Radio. I'm your host, Marvin Malik. Those of us who work in the U.S. healthcare system, no matter what state or what city we work in, have heard these stories often. According to the Census Bureau, 43.6 million Americans were uninsured in the year 2002. Census data reveal that half the uninsured are adults who are working. Most of the remainder are homemakers, students, or are disabled, and 20% are children. The uninsured are more likely to be poor, and they're more likely to be minorities, but there are individuals from all races and classes of society who are uninsured, many of them. In response to the growing number of Americans without health insurance, doctors, nurses, and other concerned citizens around the country have decided not to wait for a national health insurance program that would cover all of our citizens. Instead, these individuals have taken the matter into their own hands by organizing community health centers, municipalities have created public hospitals, and other concerned individuals have formed free clinics to care for the uninsured. And doctors and hospitals often provide care in their facilities free of charge. These certainly cannot be considered a formal system for the uninsured, But taken together, these institutions can be thought of as a kind of safety net. But in Vermont, there are no public hospitals. Vermont has several federally subsidized health centers, which provide care to the low-income uninsured in their communities at a reduced fee known as a sliding scale. These facilities provide care to about 18,000 Vermonters. But these health centers are concentrated in the northern part of the state and can't provide care to about 70% of Vermont's uninsured. Of Vermont's 600,000 citizens, 60,000 have no health insurance, and countless others, probably tens of thousands, have insurance policies with deductibles as high as $5,000 or even more, effectively priced out of the healthcare system. We'll begin today's show with an in-depth look at how citizens in the state of Vermont have formed our own homegrown safety net. We'll be looking at the free clinics of Vermont. We'll start out with Sonia Olson. Sonia is the executive director of the Vermont Coalition of Clinics for the Uninsured.
There are free clinics all over the country. I think in the 70s there was a free clinic movement that started in California. But Vermont is unique in that so much of the state is served by free clinics.
But it wasn't because Vermont got started early. Vermont's first free clinic in Putney didn't open its doors until 1991. But then other communities began to follow their lead, and by the year 2000, 9 free clinics were in operation, serving about 75% of the geographic area of the state, though many patients still have to drive 30 miles or more to get to their clinic.
Each of them had a small paid staff, usually a half-time coordinator, and lots of volunteers, lots of physicians and nurses and other people in the community who helped to provide health care on a sporadic basis to people who couldn't afford health care. People who don't have health insurance or have health insurance with a high deductible can go to these clinics and get health care. They can get help with prescription medications. And usually the free clinic is supported by its local hospital, so people often have access to diagnostic procedures and inpatient and outpatient care. The uninsured in Vermont tend to be working. Many of them have two jobs, or a couple will have three jobs between them. Many of the people who come to the free clinics have health insurance, but they have a very high deductible, so it keeps them from getting their routine preventive care. And it is not at all unusual to have somebody come to a free clinic with diabetes in a very advanced stage, or severe hypertension, or what could have been an easily treated illness that has been let go too long.
Jay Kimball runs a small logging company and lives in Worcester, Vermont. He now attends the People's Health and Wellness Clinic, the free clinic where I volunteer. He had been going to the same doctor for 15 years, but then he lost his health insurance and could no longer afford the fees at his doctor's office. Jay went without any medical care for several months, but then things began to catch up with him.
I mean, I was going over, and I tried a little bit, but like I said, I'd run out of prescriptions, and I couldn't get my prescriptions renewed unless I went in for a checkup, and I couldn't afford the checkup. I mean, it just so then I went about 6-8 months without any care at all. And finally, I just, you know, I started to develop some problems, and I need some help. And I,
what kinds of problems?
Well, I was starting to get, you know, kind of tingling in the feet, you know, isn't as good as feeling the same with my fingers. My blood pressure I knew was through the roof. I guess I didn't feel like working anymore. And the diabetes has really started to kick in more than I realized. And, of course, blood pressure and it all kind of goes together. Cholesterol and high triglycerides and stuff like that. It's all, my whole system was out of whack, and I was just, it was getting so hard to put in a day's work because I was just fatigued and just hard to get any drive to even, you know, I'd get to work and look at it and go, bleh. and I needed to get this stuff under control, and I'm still, in fact, I'm still working on getting it under control. I mean, I've just got in with these guys in the last month, and, you know, they're trying to help me get it straightened out and get it so I can kind of get back to a normal type of, you know, learning to deal with it.
He finally found People's Health and Wellness Clinic, located about 20 miles from his home in Worcester.
I mean, these people have really dug out stuff for me and talked to me and got me books and loaned me books. And, you know, they're getting it in my head that I got something that I really seriously need to deal with and that needs to be dealt with now. You know, there's no prolonging it. And see, if somebody had given me that indication a couple of years ago, I'd have had a couple of years head start on it, you know. And I guess it's kind of my own fault because I just wasn't worried yet, I guess.
Many uninsured Vermonters have been reluctant to use the free clinics because they don't want to feel like a freeloader, and they worry they'll be treated in a demeaning way. Kate Malloy uses People's Health and Wellness Clinic and later became a regular volunteer at the clinic.
I don't remember how I first learned about the clinic, but I do remember it was within the first year after I stopped being covered myself by any insurance. And I remember being very reluctant to come here. I thought, you know, I will be treated like a deadbeat. I've never been uninsured in my life. I work hard, you know, all of these sort of typical. And the first night I was here, I thought, my God, these people are wonderful. I would just say that the quality of attention that people get here surprised me enormously when I first came here. I was not treated the way I thought I would be, you know, as some down and outer. There was none of that attitude. There's an enormous sense of generosity here, and nobody, I volunteer here on clinic nights, and I have never seen anybody treated with anything except respect and care. And that just blows me away.
Jerry Klessy of Bridport, Vermont, also couldn't afford to continue going to her doctor when she lost her health insurance, and she went without medical treatment that was critical to her health. Finally, she found out about the Open Door Clinic, a free clinic located in Middlebury, Vermont, about 7 miles from her home. But at first, she didn't feel comfortable going there.
What I wound up doing was not taking my medicine and getting sick again until I was notified by my regular physician that there was such thing as the Open Door Clinic. But because I am probably a typical New Englander, I don't know, don't like to take things for free or don't want to, I want to work for what I get, I hesitated. So I went without medication for several months and got myself into a pickle again with my health. Now, the Open Door Clinic, I think, is an absolute necessity for situations like mine or other people that just do not have health insurance. I think if more doctors, rather than taking a patient that they know fully well cannot afford to pay for them, say to them, look, there's this Open Door Clinic that you could utilize, that the Open Door Clinic would be used far more often than it is now.
I asked Jerry what kinds of things she worries about for the upcoming year. One of the things on that list is the financial challenges the clinic might face.
Well, I would worry about being able to afford medication. If the Open Door Clinic were to be able to continue, I don't know what kind of funding they get or how they get it.
But Ruth Hardy does know. Ruth is the executive director of the Open Door Clinic, where Jerry Klessy is a patient.
We share a grant with the other 9 free clinics in the state, and that is our largest, that's about a little over 30% of my budget is from the state grant to the Vermont Coalition of Clinics for the Uninsured. I think we're very fortunate here in Middlebury in that we have a very generous community. We have hundreds of very dedicated donors who donate to us annually, several of whom gave us large donations to start the clinic in the early 90s and have continued with us annually with generous donations. Like I said, we're very fortunate that our community, Middlebury, Addison County, and the surrounding area is so generous. We're also a United Way agency, and I get about 12% of my funding from the United Way. We also get on all of the town warnings and get town funding at our town annual town meetings. We get funding from 18 area towns. I write lots of grant proposals. We've gotten several very generous grants from various Vermont Community Foundation, and I've gotten a couple other extra Department of Health grants, one for tobacco cessation programs for our patients this year. So a lot of what I do is fundraising. As the executive director, the primary purpose I have, I'm not a medical person, I'm a money person, and so I do the fundraising, the annual campaign, the grant funding, the state reports that are required, and keep up with whatever funding sources I can find. And it's very stressful to, you know, work in an organization that's dependent on grant funding, that's dependent on donations, and dependent on legislative funding. You know, we keep trying to raise money constantly just to make sure that we can provide for our patients and so that we can expand services when we see a need, like expanding our case management. And that required me to write 4 or 5 different grants to be able to fund a full-time case manager. And luckily, I've been able to do so this year, but next year, I'm not sure. It depends on what the financial situation in the community, in the state, and in the country is, as to whether or not the funding will always be there.
So that means your case manager can't rely on a stable job.
Well, right now, you know, right now she can. And for the next year, she can. She was just hired. And so, you know, I guess that part of my job is to make sure that she can rely on a job. Every day I fundraise. Every day I work on grant writing. Every day I write thank you notes and talk to people who may be potential funders in one way or another. So, you know, I'm constantly out there trying to provide funding in one way or another for my clinic and my patients.
And all the other free clinic directors I spoke with also cited fundraising as their primary task, a task that never ends, a task they work on every day. But why is it so important for Ruth Hardy to raise money to expand the hours of her case manager? At every free clinic, the other key position, aside from the clinic director, is the case manager. The case manager is the individual who makes things happen for the patients. June Benoit is the case manager I work with when I volunteer at People's Health and Wellness Clinic in Barre, Vermont. I asked her to describe her responsibilities.
I'm the one that they will see. I'm at every clinic session. Sometimes the physicians will have the patient come back to see me to get a blood pressure checked. If they need further referrals or diagnostics, I'm the one that calls them, that they talk on the phone to, you know, to give them information about when that appointment is or what they have to do to prep for that diagnostic test. I'm the one that calls them with their lab results or their, you know, things like that. So I'm really the one person that knows them better than the rotating healthcare providers. But it's difficult. It would be difficult for them to let the physician know who's going to see them in that 15-minute block of time, everything that was pertinent about their health status. And I can at least, you know, share with the physician what's been done in the past. I usually do a little synopsis, talk to them about what's been done, what's worked well. Sometimes if it's a, you know, difficult patient to who we worked with and we've worked really hard to improve compliance, or we've tried to negotiate or compromise part of the healthcare plan, I usually tell the physician about that so that he doesn't have different expectations.
June has done virtually every one of these activities in caring for Jenny Wilson of Washington, Vermont. 2 years ago, Jenny developed a particularly aggressive form of rheumatoid arthritis. Through this entire period, June has arranged tests, discussed test results, arranged a rheumatology specialist consultation, and perhaps most importantly, has been there to provide emotional support.
So here we are 2 years later, and a combo of 5 different drugs, some of which I've had to learn to self-inject, and I'm living again. And even though it's my rheumatologist who's prescribed my meds, I feel more indebted to this clinic, who was there for the whole me when I needed it most. I don't know how I could have survived those months of waiting without them. They enabled me to feel more in control when I was totally helpless, not to mention the monetary help with the drugs and the tests. And they're still here. they do my monthly blood tests that keep an eye on my liver and my kidneys to make sure there's no damage from the drugs I'm taking. And they help me with 2 out of the 5 drugs that I need to take daily so that I can afford the others. I really don't know where I'd be without this clinic, certainly, and financial stress and the mental stress that comes along with that. I wish our country could somehow figure out its health care crisis so people like me could afford to pay for and receive health care, but until they do, this clinic is my lifeline.
And Jenny is by no means the only patient who benefits by the clinic's efforts to obtain medications at reduced cost, and sometimes for free. Diana Barnard is a doctor who has volunteered at the Open Door Clinic for many years, and she is currently serving as the chairperson of the clinic's board of directors.
Well, pharmaceutical costs are one of the biggest obstacles to people being able to get quality and ongoing care. We do use a voucher system at the clinic where we have a certain amount of our budget that's dedicated each year to paying for prescriptions for our patients. And when we have to, we use that money. But obviously, because of the cost of so many medications is so high, we have to really be judicious in our use of that fund, or we would quickly run out of money and not have enough money to provide care to other individuals. Sometimes we can rely on samples. Increasingly, the drug companies have programs which allow you to obtain medications for free if they meet certain income requirements. And it's a full-time job in itself to learn the different paperwork and the different programs for each different company and whether or not somebody might qualify. So sometimes you're able to get a medication that somebody has been on for a while and that's working well for them for free. End of story. And other times, if you're not able to get it, then you have no choice then to switch their medicine or to try to give them samples of the next best thing every time they come in.
But substituting one drug for another has significant risks.
There may be some times when one medication is similar to another medication in terms of how well it works, but you cannot underestimate the impact of taking a patient who's been well controlled on one medication and suddenly switching them to another. They have a whole new set of side effects they may have to deal with. They, psychologically, just knowing that, oh, my blood pressure has been so well controlled for the past 2 years on this medicine, but now suddenly I have to try a new medicine because I can't afford the other one. They may experience side effects, and which causes them to either discontinue the medication or not come back for follow-up, or if it's a medicine for something like depression and they risk having either side effects or not having as adequate control of their underlying problem, it not only leaves them in a situation where their care isn't as good as it was, but it leaves them in a situation where they have a certain amount of more distrust or where they've lost confidence in medical care and its ability to really work for them. And that's where, especially in the face of lack of continuity of care, if I tell someone I have to switch them from Zoloft to Prozac and they experience side effects, but when they come back 2 weeks later, they're seeing a different provider who says, oh, well, how's it going? And they feel like, well, not quite as well, but aren't really able to articulate the same set of symptoms that they told me just 2 weeks before. It's very easy for that individual to get discouraged and say, forget it, this just isn't working. And again, not come back for follow-up.
For June Benoit, helping patients obtain their medications is one of her most time-consuming and frustrating tasks. The state of Vermont's extension of its Medicaid program to slightly less destitute individuals is referred to as VHAP. Unfortunately, VHAP now requires 60% copays on all medications. And the pharmaceutical company assistance programs have recently cut off assistance to all individuals who qualify for any public program, such as VHAP. June sees people impacted by the limited drug assistance programs every day.
And we have this one fellow that had insurance through the AmeriCorps, and his position just ended. So he has bipolar disease, and he had to pay like every month about $100 out of his own pocket while he had insurance. His medication's probably $200 to $300 a month to sustain him. So now he has applied to VHAP, and he's going to still have to pay the same probable amount of money to, in order to continue on with this medication. This is like one of the four or five medications he's finally found this combination that actually helps him be functional. So he's been asking for help at the clinic, and I've been spending a lot of time trying to find psychiatry providers who may be able to get me some of this particular medicine as samples, but I can't do that forever, and he knows that. And it may be, he's tried all the other bipolar medications, and again, this particular group that he's on, this medication plus the other medication that he's on, is really helping him be very functional. It's really sad.
A good portion of the time, June and the case managers at the other free clinics are successful in getting medications for their patients. Here's Jerry Classy again.
So I think the Open Door Clinic is my savior when I don't have insurance. Without them, I would have gone without medication again for the last 3 months. If it hadn't been for them, I would not have had my diabetes medication. I would have gone without, and any possibility could have occurred. I also would have been without my blood pressure medication, which complicates the issue.
In the second part of today's show, we'll continue our look at the free clinics of Vermont, focusing on their ability to fully meet the healthcare needs of Vermont's uninsured population. So stay with us. This is Public Health Radio. I'm your host, Marvin Malik. We're looking at some of the key healthcare facilities that are available to care for individuals who don't have health insurance in the U.S. Taken together, these organizations are commonly referred to as the medical care safety net. Today, we're examining a key component of Vermont's healthcare safety net, the Free Clinics of Vermont. On the first portion of today's show, we looked at the structure of the free clinics and how the staff and volunteers attempt to provide a comprehensive service for their patients. And we've heard the free clinic patients uniformly express tremendous gratitude to the volunteers who keep the free clinics going. Not long ago, the free clinics were highlighted on an ABC News interview with Glenn Pierce, the director of the National Association of Free Clinics. Mr. Pierce told ABC News that he believes that America is on the verge of a revolution in caring for the uninsured, that it will not come through universal health insurance, but instead through the growth of volunteerism across the country, and that this will mean additional millions of Americans having access to health care through volunteer free clinics. Let's return to Vermont for a while longer. I asked Sonia Olson, director of Vermont's Free Clinic Coalition, what she thought of Mr. Pierce's statement that free clinics are the solution to the problem of America's uninsured.
Well, the Vermont Free Clinics strongly disagree with this. We feel that we're an interim step. We're a band-aid that a free clinic is able to help people, but it is not able to provide the care that we want for ourselves or for those we care about. And when I think about the difficulty free clinics have extending care to more of the uninsured, I see the problems in two areas. One is our tremendous dependency on outside support, and the other is the limitations in what we can provide, even when everything is going well. For most free clinics, there is a limited scope of services. almost all the free clinics across the country, there is a tremendous barrier in referring people for specialized care, in finding ways to provide expensive testing and prescription medications. The list goes on and on. Geographically, the free clinics are isolated. We have 9 in Vermont, and we see people from almost all of the state and also from neighboring states, but it's inconvenient to go to a free clinic. The hours that a clinic is open are limited, and if people have a healthcare emergency, they need to go to emergency rooms. And in the best of all possible worlds, they still may need to travel up to 45 miles in order to get to the closest free clinic, and they may drive past many physicians' offices on the way that would, if they had insurance, they would be able to go to, but instead they have to go a long ways to go to the free clinic. We have 9 free clinics in Vermont. They are clustered through the middle of the state and down the southeastern border, and a large part of the state has no free clinics. People, not only are the free clinics open only a few hours each week, people need to travel a long ways to get to a free clinic. They need to be able to fit their schedules into the hours the free clinic is open.
Continuity of care is another problem free clinic patients face. In the case of People's Health and Wellness Clinic, where I volunteer, the physicians each do 1 shift every 2 months. But the rotating schedule of doctors and other practitioners is not the only contributor to breaking up continuity of care. Like many uninsured individuals, the family income of Nataka White varies, depending on the performance of his small business. So he intermittently qualifies for insurance through VHAP, Vermont's Supplemental Medicaid Program. When that insurance covers him, he goes to his regular physician, but then when his income rises a little, he loses his Medicaid coverage and is temporarily back at the open-door clinic.
Currently, it's been a back-and-forth situation, and it revolves on between the VHAP now and the clinic before, and if we make a little more money, then we're back to the clinic, and it's my guess is we're an example of a situation that a lot of families in Vermont have to deal with. A lot of families all over the nation have to deal with.
I asked Ruth Hardy, the director of the Open Door Free Clinic, about this problem.
It definitely is difficult for patients who are going on and off the public health insurance programs. We have patients who are on VHAP for 6 months and then they're off VHAP because they've had a change in income or because they've gotten a job, or they are on private insurance for 6 months because they have a job and then they lose that job and then they come back to us and we try to get them on VHAP and they're with us for a few months and then they get on VHAP. And it's very difficult for that patient to, first of all, feel comfortable with a medical professional, feel comfortable with their primary care physician because they know that person is not going to be their primary care physician for very long. It's also really very difficult for the patient to keep track of what services they are allowed under different programs. And then from a health perspective, to really be able to constantly have to explain and transfer medical records and explain medical history, and it just things fall through the cracks.
Dr. Barnard from the Open Door Clinic also worries about the limits on how much information can be transferred from one doctor to the next.
What ends up in the written chart is only a small part of the story in terms of what is going on within an individual patient's life. And so I may see somebody, and I may even write a couple of notes to myself about if this doesn't work, increase the dose, or if this doesn't work, try this medicine. But in my mind, I have a lot of other details about other things that I might try or other situations that might be playing a role, or how I know that the patient's, you know, son was just arrested and therefore their blood pressure is going to be a little high this week. And you cannot possibly have the opportunity to put all of that information in a written chart. I mean, in my mind, one of the worst things that's happened with healthcare in the past 5 or 10 years is this idea that people switch insurance every time open enrollment comes around, or that one year they might be able to see one practice, but they might have to switch a physician because their current physician doesn't take their new insurance. And it's so blatantly obvious that quality of care is compromised in that regard, because when you know a patient well, it is, you can be much more efficient and you can be much more thorough and you can have a better understanding of exactly what's going on with them and what care they need, as much based on your past experience with them, or even more based on your past experience with them than with the chief complaint they come in with that day. So in my free clinic experience, every time I go, I'm seeing somebody for the first time. And that means that I can't possibly have that same amount of knowledge and comprehension about their overall health care. And so that leads to difference in the kind of tests that I might order, or the medications I might prescribe, or when I might see them back. And it's eternally frustrating to not be able to provide that continuity of care.
Most free clinics are only open a few evenings each week. So another set of problems free clinic patients confront is what to do when they're ill, but the clinic isn't open, or if they're facing a medical emergency. Here's June Benoit again.
Patients are often very reluctant to go to the emergency room for emergent care, or the fear of being admitted, because they cannot even conceive of being stuck with a high medical bill. We have patients that come or call up and say they have chest pain, which, you know, really sounds like it's a cardiac event, and we tell them they have to call the ambulance and go to the hospital, and they would rather not, because they really are afraid to go to the hospital, afraid of the cost, and they're also afraid because often the patients say they're treated differently because they don't have insurance and they aren't able to pay. They feel very, oftentimes looked down upon by some providers. Not all, but there are some that make the patients feel that way. Or the patients perceive, maybe, you know, they're feeling badly about their situation, they perceive that others think badly of them, but it's a crisis. Not only were they having a medical crisis, then they have to worry about finances and things like that. So it's a real problem for patients, and they oftentimes won't go.
And then if a patient is out of town visiting friends or relatives and takes ill, they may be faced with a difficult decision. Jerry Classy has given a lot of thought to this issue.
Unless I was dying, laying down on the carpet dying, and somebody called 911, I do not want that financial obligation. Yes, I know it's my health, and it's, in some cases it could be a matter of long hospital stay or not, depending on the medical attention needed. However, I don't know how I would pay for it. There's many people that lose everything they've worked for under such conditions. Now, I don't have anything to lose, which maybe makes it better for me, but I still do not want that financial obligation. Probably sounds foolish, but the way I feel.
The free clinics provide primary care services, and several have mental health providers. Some have alternative practitioners volunteering, such as acupuncturists and chiropractors. But only one clinic provides dental care, and the clinics provide little or no specialty services, such as cardiology or orthopedics. Ruth Hardy, director of the Open Door Clinic, views this as a weakness in her clinic's service offering.
We do try to work with specialists in the area as much as possible to get our patients referred to them at either no cost or low cost. But I would say that that's one of our largest weaknesses, is we can't provide this specialized care because we just aren't able to do it in our clinic setting, which is just a once or twice a week setting in a donated doctor's office space. And some of the specialists in town are wonderful in terms of donating their services and their time and seeing our patients, and some of the specialists are not as able or willing to do that. And so that's a definite weakness when our patients do need to be referred for specialized care. That becomes a problem.
Free clinics provide little or no x-ray or lab testing, and few events can produce a huge medical bill as quickly as an operation or any hospitalization. This makes the free clinics and their patients dependent on many other providers, especially hospitals. Fortunately, many of the hospitals have been willing to provide x-ray and lab services at a discounted price, and on some occasions they'll write off emergency department bills or the bills from entire hospitalizations. The story of Lorraine Thurston of Bradford, Vermont, shows what a large impact the support of hospitals have on the lives of free clinic patients. Lorraine uses the Good Neighbor Clinic at White River Junction, Vermont.
For my high cholesterol, they help me lower it. Ladies First helps me pay for my PEPs and helps me pay for my some of the x-rays that I have to have done. They help me pay for my pills. When the doctor recommends me to have a certain kind of pill, like I'm on an allergy pill, they paid for those.
The two medical schools that serve Vermont provide tremendous support to the free clinics and their patients. Lorraine is scheduled for an operation at Dartmouth Medical School. In her case, Dartmouth is waiving both hospital and surgical costs for the operation. But she hasn't always been so fortunate. A few years ago, also when she required surgery, she was treated at another hospital in Vermont where they did not waive the hospital charges.
Through the Barry Hospital, because I have health insurance when I was living in Barry. I went to them and they put me on a budget plan so I could pay for my bill. And that's the only way I can do to pay for our bills is put on a budget plan.
But budget plan might be something that really is in your budget, or it might add a hardship to your family. I guess
yeah,
that
it does. It does add a hardship to my family.
Tell me about it.
Well, it adds a really tough time where I have to take extra money out every week and send it out to another bill, and it makes it harder on food-wise, and I sometimes have to go some other way to get some food and other things. Sometimes I don't have enough of certain things that I need during the month, like milk, eggs, and we have to budget our money, like take our canned goods and bring them to the redemption center to do that. But it gets very, very hard and stressful. And my family is there to support me. Anything I've gone through in the past, they've helped me out with food to just make me through to pay for my bills so I won't be stuck buying it somewhere. Or they come and they taken us to their home and put us up for a while so we can pay for our bills.
As is the case for many clinic patients, Lorraine Thurston regrets that she doesn't have health insurance and can't pay for her care.
But I've never had regular insurance to pay for anything. I had to go through the welfare system or through the Good Neighbor Clinic.
How do you feel about that?
Well, it kind of binds me. I like to go to work and get my own health insurance so we won't have to be in that combine. I feel like I'm in a combine where I can't get anywhere, and because of I am dyslexic, I can't read or write, and the Good Neighbor Clinic has helped me through this. They've given me services where I felt that I have a friend that I can call when I need someone to talk about, where I'm not so worried, and because when I don't have health insurance, it hurts because I like to pay for my own things, and it bothers me because I can't do it.
The free clinics do not have set fees for the care they provide, but they do ask patients to donate if they're able to. Lorraine is skilled at knitting and is planning to donate her knitting work to Dartmouth in return for the surgery they're providing free of charge, and she also donates to the Good Neighbor Clinic the same way.
I'm going in for surgery in December on the 11th, and they're going to pay for that, and I'm going to refund them by donating some things I make out of yarn to the kids for Christmas. That's what I do. And that's how I pay for my health insurance, is by making things. Because I've made a blanket for the Good Neighbor Clinic, and I've given them other things.
It's wonderful.
We can't afford to pay for health insurance. Our income is right at the bracket where my husband makes too much money, and they help us.
Earlier in today's broadcast, Ruth Hardy described how dependent the free clinics are on charitable donations, on grant support, and on contributions from state and local governments. She failed to mention that clinics also ask patients to donate what they can for the care they receive. But the story we just heard illustrates the fact that most free clinic patients cannot donate nearly enough to begin to cover the clinic's costs. But Lorraine Thurston's story also clearly demonstrates how crucial the support of the academic centers has been to Vermont's free clinics. The academic medical centers at both Dartmouth and the University of Vermont in Burlington support all the free clinics, often running and staffing entire clinics, provide lab and specialty care for several clinics, and often provide hospital care free of charge, as was the case with Lorraine. This made me wonder if the high quality and often low fees that free clinic patients face in Vermont may be something that could not be replicated elsewhere in the country. In many parts of the United States, there is no medical school in the area, and medical schools across the country have been facing increasingly tight budgets. I moved from Albany, New York to Vermont in May of 2001. Just before I moved, Albany Medical College shocked the community by abruptly moving both of its internal medicine primary care practices from the inner city to Albany's wealthiest suburb 6 miles away from the city center. Gordon Schiff, who has spent his career providing care to the largely uninsured population of Chicago at Cook County Hospital, is on the faculty of the University of Illinois' College of Medicine and has also been involved with Chicago's other medical schools. I asked Dr. Schiff whether he thought the generosity that Vermont's medical colleges have shown to the free clinics is something we're likely to see in most other parts of the United States.
The reality of academic medical centers' current fiscal plight means that they're cutting back all sorts of things. They're closing their own clinics. They're unable to cross-subsidize for uninsured patients. They're having less availability of faculty and students to serve in these kind of settings. The two institutions that I'm most familiar with, the University of Illinois and Rush, who were each involved at different times in sort of the first OEO Neighborhood Health Center, which is even a step up in terms of its funding base from a free clinic, basically never were able to provide support for what was needed and make it a viable enterprise.
As we heard repeatedly on today's show, the care that the free clinics provide is enormously appreciated by their patients. But we have also seen the dependence of Vermont's free clinics on the success of unending fundraising efforts, on the goodwill of volunteers, and on hospitals, especially Vermont's two academic centers. And we've seen limitations in the care they're able to provide, especially in terms of hospital and specialty services. But Vermont is the state with the greatest coverage of free clinics. So Vermont would be the state closest to realizing Glenn Pierce's vision of the free clinics as the key solution to the problems of the uninsured. The free clinics in Vermont currently serve about 6,000 individuals each year, about 10% of Vermont's uninsured. I asked Sonia Olson if she had considered expanding to provide care for the 60% or so of Vermont's uninsured population who are currently not being served by either community health centers or free clinics. Is such an expansion feasible from her point of view?
Well, I think it's simply impossible, just for all the reasons we've been talking about, that free clinics aren't the answer to the healthcare system and all the limitations there are. But being as dependent as we are on volunteerism and the support of local hospitals, it just doesn't make sense that we could even begin to meet that kind of need. I'm always impressed with how each free clinic finds ways to meet the growing needs or changing needs.
and how they pull together and seem to find resources, but to think that they could have an eightfold increase, I mean, I don't know where the volunteers would come from. I don't know how the hospitals could possibly absorb that level of vouchers for laboratory tests. How we would find the time to develop programs to get medications for people, it's just impossible to think.
So we worry what may happen to free clinic patients when they're seeing a different doctor at each visit. Worry that they may not have a reliable supply of their medications. We wonder if they'll be able to complete needed x-rays and lab tests. And we don't know what may happen if they require emergency or hospital care or get sick when they're away visiting a friend or relative. Given all these limitations, I return to Diana Barnard to ask if she ever has doubts about whether working at the free clinic is the best thing for her to do.
We are stuck in this dilemma of it's some care instead of no care, and it's very easy to walk around and pat ourselves on the back and say, isn't this great that we are here 2 days a week for 3 hours at a stretch for people who otherwise wouldn't have access to care. But when the quality of care can't possibly be the same as what the rest of the population is able to get going to the same provider week after week, yeah, in a way, you do start to wonder, am I really doing good or am I doing half bad? You know, it is a dilemma.
But it's obvious that Diana Barnard will keep working her shift at the Open Door Clinic. And I'll keep on volunteering at the clinic in my area also. Hopefully, though, our country will do better someday. Hopefully a day that will come sooner rather than later. In all the other industrialized countries, there's no safety net because the citizens of those countries don't need a safety net. The wealthy countries of Asia, Europe, Australia, and Canada all provide decent health care for every citizen. If we all take seriously our responsibilities of active public citizenship, there's no reason that we in the U.S. can't do the same. After all, we're wealthier than any of the other 25 or so developed countries, and we already spend twice as much as any of those countries on health care. I asked Sonia Olson what she'd like to see the listeners do.
I'd love to see people bring the holiday spirit to their free clinic, to contact the free clinic in their area and ask how they might help. And for those who don't live near a free clinic, I'd remind them that there are still people in their area who have no health insurance and can't afford health care. So they and everyone else can find the group in their area, and there is a group like this in every area, that is working to find the answers to the health care crisis. And they can join this group and move the political system towards one that will provide health insurance for everyone.
Public Health Radio's prime broadcast areas include portions of Vermont and Massachusetts. Listeners from those states may wonder if today's show was relevant to them in light of recently passed health legislation in both states. To those listeners, I simply say that neither reform will likely diminish the number of health care-related bankruptcies and near bankruptcies. Both bills trade in the problem of uninsurance to the growing problem of inadequate insurance, meaning coverage that just isn't there for you and doesn't cut it or protect you if you actually become seriously ill. And neither bill does anything to diminish the hemorrhage of healthcare money into the coffers of insurance companies, drug companies, highly paid CEOs, and neither piece of legislation relieves healthcare providers from their need to hire denizens of administrative employees to contend with managed care and insurance companies. So there will not even be the slightest slowdown in healthcare cost inflation. This will mean that more employers will be unable to provide decent quality coverage, and government budgets will be ever more burdened by healthcare costs. And most importantly, neither reform law will really allow us to be certain that we will have affordable health coverage in 2 years, 4 years, and 6 years out, There is just no health security in either piece of legislation. So the battle for a humane health system will still need to be fought. These recent reforms were just minor skirmishes. In the name of basic decency, I ask the listeners to have the perseverance to keep that struggle alive. Well, that's it for today's show. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all the doctors, nurses, administrators, and all the other fine people who allowed me to interview them. And I especially want to thank the patients I recorded for sharing very personal information and feelings. Today's airing will be the final regular broadcast of Public Health Radio. We will instead transform Public Health Radio to documentary production, though not on a monthly basis. Most of the previous airings of Public Health Radio will nonetheless still be accessible at our website, publichealthradio.org. I want to take this opportunity to thank the staff of Public Health Radio, Jerry Zahavi for his unequaled technical work, Karen Klotz, Peggy Sapphire, and wonderful Wanda Page for working on innumerable administrative tasks. Finally, I'd like to thank my listeners for all the positive feedback and helpful suggestions, and to wish you all a wonderful holiday season and a happy, healthy new year. Thanks once again.